Greetings. This is Nancy Addison, and I'm here with James Roguski, and he is a health enthusiast, a holistic health enthusiast, an author, and an incredible researcher. And I feel like many of you might know him by now, but James has been looking into what has been going on with the WHO for the last year, and he's found some incredible information, and he's going to share with us today something he's discovered about the last couple of months with some secret meetings with people that don't reveal their identity, that are not voted into office, and will affect really everyone around the world. And so welcome to the show, James.
Thanks for having me. I'm a buffer this morning. I've got information that, you know, I'm enthusiastically pursuing. We were joking around before the call, so don't let the smile on my face hide the fact that I am absolutely pissed off about what's going on. And I can do that with a smile on my face because you've got to be able to differentiate, you know, what's going on out there in the world that you need to take action about, but yet, you know, keep a presence of about yourself so that you behave appropriately, even though on the inside about this information, I am just furious. And if you're not enraged, then you haven't been paying attention or you haven't been given, you know, the information. And that's probably the case. The mainstream media is not going to be telling you what you're going to hear today.
Right. This is not ever anywhere I can see in mainstream media. And I think this is vitally important for all of us because I have very deep suspicions that this agenda is by the globalists who basically want to take over the world and control us all using health as their excuse. And we're not going to go into all the health details that I feel have been wrongly imposed or taught to us pretty much all our life. But we're going to talk about treaties and these meetings that have been held in secret with information and proposals that have not been revealed their information to the public as well. So lots of secrecy. And I find that suspicious in itself.
Absolutely. And as part of that secrecy is the corruption of language. Okay. And so let me just kind of set the stage out at the beginning and reinterpret some things that people may or may not have heard to begin with, but just to get it straight. Okay. First and foremost, the World Health Organization, I refer to them as the World Hypnosis Organization, because they're really not about health. They're really about making recommendations and then hypnotizing people into believing that those are obligations. Okay. And so when the WHO says, well, we recommend this or we recommend that, it's really not much different than your neighbor going, hey, you ought to do this or you ought to do that. Okay. But somehow people get confused. And they think, oh, the WHO said so, so we must obey, okay? It's hypnosis, people. It's not law, okay? Now, there are some tiny little things that are legally binding, okay? One of those things is referred to as the International Health Regulations. It's a 84-page document. It's wrongly named, in my opinion. It should be referred to as the International Surveillance Recommendations. It's got nothing to do with health. It's got everything to do with surveilling, monitoring, reporting if there's something going on inside a country. Okay. Now, rightfully so, okay, if they bomb the nuclear plant in the Ukraine, and, you know, radioactive material is in the air headed towards another country, that's a public health emergency of international concern, and reporting should happen, okay? If there's some new crazy disease and, you know, hundreds of people are showing up at a hospital in some city somewhere, and there's word that maybe, you know, people who know those people have traveled to other nations. Hey, that's a public health emergency of international concern. I get it. You know, it's all valid if it's used in the manner that it was intended or, you know, should be used that everybody accepts. Well, what I've come to find is that public health emergency of international concern, or PHEIC, fake, I'm giving it a new name, right? And that's Pharmaceutical Hospital Emergency Industrial Complex, PHEIC. Pharmaceutical Hospital Emergency Industrial Complex. What's going on is corrupt people around the world have figured out how to game the system, raise the fears of an emergency. I'll just say moneypox, okay? I don't pronounce the K, it's silent. It's moneypox, people. It's follow the money, you know, cui bono, you know, who benefits? Chase where the money's being made, okay? The dictator general of the World Hypnosis Organization can ignore his advisory scientific committee and go, no, we got a public health emergency of international concern, and ka-ching, the money starts flowing, okay? And so what they're doing now is they've realized that 20 years ago, they weren't able to convince the 194 member nations to give them as much money as they wanted to do all the many things that they would love to do. The amount of money that the U.S. is obligated to pay to the WHO is a lot of money for you and me, but in you know, times, it's really not that much. It's only about $100 million a year. Now, I know to say only $100 million, but you got to realize, you know, that's like a quarter of a lottery ticket these days. You know, I mean, the lottery is $1 billion, okay? And so what has happened is the WHO wasn't getting as much money, so they changed their rules, and they started accepting donations from civil society, okay? They have many names, foundations, nonprofit organizations, even corporations.
Okay? May I make a statement?
Non-government organizations, non-state actors, sure.
So I just want to kind of let my opinion out, and it not meaning this in any way negative to what you're saying, but I believe that the whole WHO was formed in order to create these fake panics on fake diseases that are not even real. And they literally created it with controlling the population in mind using these fake demics as their way of doing that. So, you know, that might be a whole nother show, but I don't believe in any of this stuff. And I think this fake virus and this, the fact that they've never isolated a virus ever in history, ever. And I think the germ theory is completely false. I think that was fake science. And I think a lot of what we're being told literally since like 1954, or maybe even before that, back to Louis Pasteur, was just actually set in motion to create this situation today where the globalists just want to rule the world and have a depopulation agenda of 90% by 2030. And so I know that opens a whole big can of worms there, but think that there should be no public. I mean, if there's an accident, a nuclear accident, I think we should know about it, but I think we should all have the right individually to have the freedom to make whatever choices we want to do individually with our own body and our own health. And I just don't believe in any of this overlording of us by the pharmaceutical companies or people like the guy in charge of the WHO, which when he was in charge of his own country, Ethiopia, was found to have so many people died. You know, people really thought that, he was the cause of the massive deaths, and he's not even a doctor. And, you know, why in the world would I listen to him about anything? So anyway, I just don't believe in any of these people, even though they think they have authority. I just don't believe that.
Let me straighten out the confusion, okay? Because all of those things come into play, but here's the issue at hand, okay? When people actually look at the WHO Constitution and they look at the international health regulations, what those documents say is often very completely different than what people assume they say, okay? The international health regulations are not about health. You would be wise to think, oh, I'm going to be reading about health when I read the international health regulations, and you start reading through it, and you're like, it doesn't say anything about doctors, it doesn't say anything about nutrition or pure water or food or, you know, avoiding pesticides or, you know, healthy diet or none of, no, it's all about surveillance. Now, if it was named the international surveillance regulations, people would be like, oh, what the hell's going on there? Okay. And so when the Indonesian health minister gets up at the G20 and he says, oh, you know, we've submitted amendments to the international, he had said, we've submitted amendments to the international surveillance regulations. Okay. And we're going to have a, you know, vaccine passport. He said, digital health certificate. Okay. No, this is all about command and control. Okay, so they changed the language to get y'all confused. And you're absolutely right. You know, they're just using the system to gain more control. But even though that little snippet from the G20 and the documents and all that all made the headlines and people are talking about the vaccine passport, and it's a very important thing, what didn't get talked about is the fact that that health minister is not a doctor. Okay. He's the first health minister from Indonesia since before World War II who's not a doctor. He's a banker. Think about that just for a moment, people. That person who is the health minister of Indonesia is convincing the top 20 nations in the world to have a vaccine travel certificate, not a health minister. That digital health certificate is not about your health. It's about money. And what got missed is later on in his discussion, he said very clearly that they have set up a multi-billion dollar fund and they hope to get it to $10 billion a year, which quite frankly makes Bill and Melinda Gates look like a bunch of paupers. Okay. They give about $1 billion, right? 10 billion is an order of magnitude more. What the WHO is doing is saying to the Bill and Melinda Gates, you know, thank you very much for your money, but we're moving on up. Okay. We want orders of magnitude more money than even Bill and Melinda Gates can provide. Right. And the health minister, who's really a banker, speaking to a bunch of business people in Malaysia at the G20, said to them very clearly, this is a business opportunity. Okay. We're going to be manufacturing, you know, we have funding tens of billions of dollars to fund the manufacturing of, you know, what are pandemic preparedness products? Okay. Drugs, injections,
destroy our health.
things that, you know, where's the actual health building, immunity building? I mean, if they had $10 billion and they said, oh, we're going to give a kit to everybody on the planet and it's going to have vitamin C and D and zinc and, you know, nutrition and get them all to have healthy, you know, organic, non-pesticide laden food that isn't GMO. Boy, that'd be money well spent for your health. But you got to realize that proposals are coming from bankers. Okay, this is not a pandemic treaty. These are not amendments to the international health regulations. These are business opportunities for people who participate in crony capitalism. Okay, and on top of that is the control mechanisms. Okay, and so it's a, on one level, I hear everything you said, but bankers don't care if it's an exosome or a toxin or 5G or a virus or a bioweapon mRNA. It's irrelevant to them. How do they make money on selling people something? That's just part of the sales pitch, okay? If you look at all of this as if it was an Amway meeting, right? You know, a network marketing proposal, they're basically just saying, look, we're convincing the big money lenders to make a fund with billions of dollars. And he literally said, this is a great opportunity, go invest, okay? And when you hear Bill Gates say something like, vaccinations were like the best investment, best return on investment that he's ever had, you scratch your head and you go, how in the hell can that work? Here's how it works. Governments give money to the WHO. WHO wants more money. So foundations like Bill and Melinda Gates and Gavi and all these other ones, they get money from wherever they get money, okay? They give it to the WHO with strings attached. And they go, well, we're giving you this money, but here's what we want you to do with it. And they have holdings in the companies that do the work that gets funded through the WHO. In any other world, that's money laundering. That's corruption. That's crony capitalism. But they've hidden it under the veneer of civil society. I hate it when they use that word, okay? I see it as fascism with a 21st century upgrade. I think we've spoken about this before. Mussolini defined fascism as government and corporations working together to beat up on the people. Think the federal government meeting with Facebook and Twitter and saying, oh, we want you to censor those people. The government can't do it, and the government isn't legally allowed to tell the corporations to do it, but they have broken the law and they have done that. That, people, is fascism. This activity is fascism, right? That's what we're dealing with in our own government. With the WHO, it's fascism with a modern day upgrade, where the third leg of it, you've got government, corporations, and now foundations or non-government organizations or nonprofits or by whatever name they want to go, funneling money. Governments give money to these foundations like Planned Parenthood and other organizations like that. Well, what did they do with the money? Well, when they give it to the WHO and the WHO then gives it to Pfizer or Moderna or whatever companies are doing the work that is funded by the WHO, who owns those companies other than the people who run the foundations? Now, the WHO has a list of at least 393 relevant stakeholders, okay? It's supposed to be that the WHO is all the member nations representing we the people. But what has happened is we the people are giving less than 20% of the money. So we're not seen as relevant anymore. The 80% of the money that's coming from the 393 relevant stakeholders, they're relevant because they donate money.
Right.
Okay.
Hello, everyone. We had a little bit of a technology glitch, and so we're putting this interview together in two parts. And so we're picking up where we left off with James Roguski, who is filling us in on what he's learned about these secret meetings that WHO has been conducting the last month and a half or two, and with secret agendas and proposals that they have not revealed the contents of to us. And so, James, I give you the floor to continue sharing with us your important information.
Absolutely. We're recording this on Sunday the 27th, and Monday the 28th through December 2nd, which is Friday, I'm not kidding about this. This is a very secret set of negotiations. The International Health Regulations Review Committee will be meeting all week in secret to do whatever it is people do in secret when they're talking about amending the international health regulations. Now, they're not totally secret because obviously I know they exist. It was a committee put together by the Director General of the World Hypnosis Organization, Tedros Ghebreyesus, and the review committee is sworn to keep everything confidential. They literally reported that at their first meeting, they have, you know, sort of a report on their first meeting and their second meeting, that their lawyer, you know, literally said to them, "Thou shalt not speak of this." Okay. They report only to Tedros.
Do we even know who those people are?
We sure do. It's in one of the articles on my Substack. You know, a cast of characters that have the greatest of resumes, you know, the finest upstanding experts in the field. And what they are doing is something that I think is actually very nefarious, and they may or may not even realize what the heck it is they're being sucked into, right? Try to explain this, okay? If you go all the way back to May and the World Health Assembly, the 75th meeting of the World Health Assembly, all of the delegates got together in Geneva. One of the things that they adopted was the creation, or I should actually say the transmogrification, you know, the transition of a working group on pandemic response, WGPR, changed the name and changed the focus to the working group for amendments to the international health regulations, WGIHR. And they said, well, we want this group to get together and meet in the middle of November. And they did meet on the 14th and the 15th. Super secret, no report yet, you know, 2 weeks later about that meeting. And so also in May, they gave instructions to all of the member nations by September 30th, please submit proposals to amend the existing international surveillance regulations. Okay. And so 14 proposals were presented or submitted prior to September 30th. Four of the nations put forth their proposals on behalf of groups of nations. So it's way more than 14 countries involved. The Czech Republic did it on behalf of the European Union, Uruguay on behalf of a South American group of nations, Eswatini, a very small nation in South Africa, submitted on behalf of the African nation and nations, and then there's the Russian Federation, okay? And so it is known that these 14 submissions were made. They did reveal that. They did reveal that they want to amend nearly half, 32 out of the 66 articles in the regulations are subject to proposed amendments. The Indonesian health minister, who's really a banker, clearly admitted that they want to change some of the articles that deal with digital health certificates. But the actual proposals are, you know, top secret. I did, more than a month ago, submit a number of Freedom of Information requests. People in the UK, Finland, Canada, South Africa, Australia, and New Zealand have submitted to their respective governments Freedom of Information requests. What are the proposed amendments to the regulations? These things affect our lives. Well, it's absolutely top secret. Okay, they will not reveal it. We've sent letters to the review committee. We've sent letters to, you know, government. Mum's the word. Okay, the information will eventually come out, but right now everybody should be pissed. I'm smiling because we're having a good time and I love talking to you, but I'm pissed off. It's like, you will not decide the fate of the world in secret meetings that only report to Tedros, because here's what happened. The working group of the nations was supposed to meet on November 14th and 15th, 2 weeks ago now, almost. But Tedros created this review committee and had them meet the week before. And it appears, now this is where you get into, you know, speculation, it appears that they're trying to intercede certainly in the timeline, whereas a review committee should come after the negotiations. The review committee has been placed before the negotiations. And it's like, well, you know, what kind of horse trading is going on in private here? You know, what is to the amendments that the nations proposed? And are we ever going to get to see them? Or are we just going to get a sanitized final document? And we're not ever be able to know what the individual nations actually proposed.
Well, and James, and, if I recall, we didn't know who was attending those meetings either at that time. They didn't reveal, or they wouldn't reveal, the names of those people attending it. So we don't even know who these people are. They're certainly not.
If I think what you're referring, I what you're referring to is the delegates to the World Assembly are nicely kept secret. I literally, I kid you not, you can't make this stuff up. I sent in a specific Freedom of Information Act request to the Health and Human Services Department, who are the delegates to the World Health Organization. And the response, entertaining, I must admit, if not infuriating, is like, oh, well, you know, we don't have that information. It's like, wow, you know, that's either just a flat out lie or an unbelievable level of incompetence. Okay. I mean, I know who the delegates are. I see their faces in the thing, you know, but they won't publish an official list of people. And it changes, you know, as time goes by, people come and go. Clearly, chief delegate is Javier Becerra, the Secretary of Health and Human Services. There are a handful of other people who are in that circle, and you know, one gets to be the deputy delegate and one gets to be the delegate, and then they have like 50 advisors and alternates and all that sort of stuff. The Secretary of State, Antony Blinken, has named, I believe it's Pamela Hamamoto, as the designated ambassador for the pandemic treaty. Okay, so there is a person who has been named to oversee the negotiations for the treaty, but that's different than the amendments. And so my concern is that the talk of the treaty, and we'll talk about that in a little bit, the talk about the pandemic treaty, which they've given it many new names now. Okay, great. We know who that person is. We don't know how to get a hold of her, and she's not going to answer your emails and your phone calls. But at the very least, you know, kudos to Secretary Blinken. He did properly put in charge a person to negotiate a treaty. But that's a decoy, because the meat of what's going on right now are these secret negotiations with this review committee to talk about the proposed amendments to the international really surveillance regulations.
Well, and so I want to just state too that the information you uncovered last year for May, it was the U.S. delegate that had proposed having it amended so that it would override our constitution. So, I mean,
and the little bit of teaser information that the International Health Regulation Review Committee has provided shows that the United States has submitted this time around proposed amendments, and they are the identical articles that are going to be amended as in the earlier this year, minus one, which did actually get amended in a different way by a different group, by a different document, okay? And so one could reasonably think that they're just resubmitting the same thing, okay? Because it lines up pretty good. Maybe it's different, but it appears like it's likely to be identical. But there are a total of 14, including the U.S., two of the proposals were only comments, okay? So there's at least 11 more serious proposals from the UK and Russia and Africa and Indonesia and so forth and so on, that are just being kept secret. And the total of it would propose to change 32 out of the 66 articles in the IHR, which is, you know, pretty much half. And there are also what's called annexes, which are like addendum to the article. There are currently 9 annexes, and they're submitting changes to 5 of them, and Africa wants to create a 10th annex. And many of those things deal with vaccine certificates, okay? Now, their argument is, oh, well, you know, if you just have a vaccine certificate and you comply, you know, then you'll be able to travel freely. It's like, well, wait just a minute. The vaccines don't stop transmission, and they're not really vaccines. So the you know, the COVID-19 injections don't do what they're supposed to do. So that's just about obedience. It's not about health. It's, you know, anybody at this point in time who gets one of these jabs, knowing that it doesn't stop transmission, doesn't stop infection, doesn't stop death and disability and damage and all these other sort of things. Anyone who complies now is simply doing so just because they're being obedient. And that's not a valid reason to restrict travel. Oh, you can't travel to Bali unless you obey and do what we tell you to do. It's got nothing to do with your health.
It has nothing to do with health at all. In fact, I think the statistics are now showing out of Great Britain and the U.S., especially the VAERS, that you're much more likely to actually die if you've had this injection. And so
we haven't even really yet talked about the treaty. Okay, I mentioned that Pamela Hamamoto has been named to be the ambassador. But just to clarify what we've talked about so far, to keep straight in everybody's mind, what we're talking about are very super secret proposed amendments from the United States and a whole host of other nations to change existing international law. Now, the concern about this and why I'm paying so much attention to is this path is much easier for the World Health Organization to achieve, and whoever's behind them, okay, use your imagination, because it simply requires in May at the 76th World Health Assembly for a simple majority, you know, half plus one of the member nations to say yes. Okay, we adopt these amendments. And they're busy having all of these secret negotiations now. So we're getting to see the horse trading that's going on. We don't know what kind of promise being made. You know, how are yes votes being purchased right now? Now, that's an accusation that I can't back up, right? And I understand the difference between evidence and speculation, okay? The situation is such that we know proposals are being made. It's likely that with all these nations, there's going to be conflict. They love to come out of these meetings with consensus, okay? Well, you know, whose knees are being broken? Who's being threatened? Who's being bribed? Who's being promised contracts? Who's being promised, you know, oh, you do this, we'll do that, we'll do the other thing. You know, these are the classic, it might not be smoke-filled rooms, might not, you know, be cigar smoke going on these days, but secret negotiations are going on with people who are only to speak to Tedros. They only report to Tedros. The International Health Regulations Review Committee is not democratically elected, and it's not even our appointed delegates. There's a band of, I believe it's 18 people. I will name one of them because he's going to get a letter from me later today. Lawrence Oglethorpe Gostin. Professor Gostin is very well renowned, you know, he's got a 54-page resume, okay? He is a member of the review committee. He is an expert in the WHO system of experts, okay? But I do not believe he is legally, properly authorized to represent the United States in the negotiations of an international agreement. But I believe that's what he's essentially doing. Lawrence Oglethorpe Gostin. Okay. I don't know the man. Very, you know, well respected, but he's involved in something that I feel is inappropriate. And the people are not allowed to know what other nations have submitted as proposals. We're not even allowed to know what our nation has submitted as a proposal. And all of the people all around the world are not allowed to know what their delegates have submitted as proposals. Now, the Indonesian banker, I'm happy and, you know, pleased to be talking to you.
That's very disturbing.
I'm fired up, but...
But pardon one me? Thing about this treaty is it's unique in that the, apparently...
Hold on. Mm-hmm. We haven't even begun talking about the treaty yet, just to keep it clear. What we're talking about are amendments to existing regulations. Go ahead.
Okay. But the treaty, from what I understand, is unique in that it would, just the signature of the treaty alone would ERSEP and circumvent. And this is, you know, I don't know this absolutely 100%, but this is what I have heard and understand to be the case, is that it would circumvent any kind of constitution of every nation in the world and all elected officials. It will supersede it just by the signing of it alone. It was very craftily written. From what I understand, that it could do that. And I think that's a really dangerous problem that this could present.
As bad as that sounds, okay, and we'll talk about that if you have time, you know, in a few moments. That's about the treaty. That's not what I'm talking about. What I'm talking about is worse.
Okay.
Just to put a smile on your face, okay? You know, we're having a good time on a Sunday morning. So let's keep these things clear. What you're referring to, I understand all the details. That's the treaty. That's not what I've been talking about. What I've been talking about are amendments to the existing regulations. And the reason why I say it's worse is no signature is needed at all.
I hear okay? you.
But here's how the process works. The next 76th World Health Assembly will be at the end of May in 2023. If these are proposed, now they've been saying that they're not going to submit these until 2024. Okay. I don't believe them, but that's what they've been saying. There is the possibility that these amendments are crafted and submitted in January, like Biden did earlier in the year. They could, and they may very well submit amendments in January 2023 and consider them at the May Assembly, the 76th World Health Assembly in May. And if a simple majority of all of the nations in the world adopt it, it's only 98 countries out of 194, okay? 97 is half of 194, one more, 98. So if 98 nations can get bought off to say yes to this pile of amendments, it's adopted, and a year later, it comes into force, no signature required. Okay, now we get one vote. We've got 330 million people. China, you know, has 1.4 billion people. India has 1.4 billion people. Brazil and Indonesia and, you know, Germany and South Africa, all these, you know, highly populated countries, we all get one vote. Do you think it's possible to buy the votes of nations that are small, island, you know, in the Pacific and in, you know, everywhere else? You think you could cobble together 98 votes by making some deals in a quiet, you know, secluded, secret meeting? Okay. Now, I can't prove that that's what's going on, but I can prove that something's going on and we're not party to it. We're not allowed to know what those proposals are. We're not allowed to hear the negotiations. The working group for amendments to the international health regulations met for 2 days last week. Total silence. They didn't, you know, live stream their thing. As of today, they have not filed a report. They have not filed, you know, anything. You know, maybe tomorrow they'll publish all the documents and I'll be like, oh, great, now we get to see them. Okay. But for 2 months, it's been a secret. and a review committee that includes Lawrence Oglethorpe Gostin from the United States has been meeting and only reporting to Tedros, okay? And the WHO calls this transparency. Well, the word transparency must have gotten a new definition. Okay, so, all right. So I've beaten that into a pulp here.
No, I'm sorry. They keep rewriting the dictionaries to change the definitions of words that they don't want us to question them on. It's just such a thing they're doing.
Let's shift gears and talk about the treaty, okay? Because you raised a very important question. Personally, at this moment in time, you know, the treaty is a horror show. It's a real thing. But I think the analogy that works is it's a big, heavy, slow-moving freight train that's still not going downhill yet. It's still trying to get some traction, okay? It's an abomination. But it's also a decoy at this faster moving bullet train amendments to the international health regulations that could be, you know, boom, in place in, you know, before you blink an eye. That being said, the pandemic treaty, they've called it many things. They started off calling it by words that are in the WHO constitution. It's either a convention, an agreement, or an other international instrument. They used to refer to it as the CAII, Convention Agreement International Instrument, okay? The latest document, they're calling the draft that they have in place, it's a 32-page document, they're calling it the Conceptual Zero Draft, okay? And then in the document, they named it what I refer to as the HUCA Plus, WHO, CA plus. That's literally what they call it. And I call it the hookah plus because they got to be smoking something wacky to think that we're not going to be paying attention to this and getting them to stop. But it's literally the name that they call it now is either the conceptual zero draft, which is a phrase that they just made up, or the WHO convention agreement plus, CA plus. I call it the hookah plus. It has a world of things that they would love to control. On one of my articles, I put the top 10 things, you know, that people might want to know about it. We can pull that up if you want and talk about it. But I think in simplistic terms, you can summarize it very simply. It's about money. It's a business opportunity. It's a way of pretending to be concerned about outbreaks of disease that could spread across the world and kill people. But it's a way to make money. It's a way to get funding, not from the nations and not from Bill and Melinda Gates and all of the foundations, but to get money from the World Bank and the International Monetary Fund, and pretty soon, probably digital currency. At some point, somebody is going to be in a position to say, World Health Organization, how much money would you like this year? Boom, digital money. Okay, go do whatever the heck it is you want to do, right? That's where this craziness is headed. And if you read between the lines in the quote-unquote hookah plus, it has this guise of, well, you know, the nations that had not already been infiltrated by the pharmaceutical industry, okay? They missed out on the drugs and they missed out on the injectables. And that's not fair, right? Why should all the rich nations like the United States and Israel and the UK and Australia and Canada, you know, why should they be able to buy 10 times the doses that they need, okay, to keep dosing their population off into the future? And poor nations in Africa and Asia and South America, you know, they had to struggle to get, you know, a small amount of doses. Well, interestingly enough, and I have an article coming out very soon about this, in the very first informal focused meeting that the intergovernmental negotiating body held, they had about a 15-minute segment where they asked their experts, and this is all public on their website, what metrics would the WHO be able to enforce to show that the nations have met their core capacity requirements? These are their lingo, okay? You know, do they have the capacity to be prepared for a potential pandemic? And my jaw just about hit the floor, because all of their experts pretty much said, well, you know, in this last pandemic, you would have thought that, you know, the wealthy nations would have done much better. But as it turns out, despite all of the metrics of how we would measure preparedness, the poor nations seem to be doing better. And you go, well, maybe that's because your pandemic response products like drugs and injections are actually bad. And the other nations who didn't have access to the pharmaceutical industry's garbage, and they did more natural things, used less expensive essential medications and nutrition and just wisdom, okay, they did better. They cannot comprehend that they have that hypocritical position of wanting to enforce core capacity requirements that in this pandemic proved to be totally wrong. And all of their experts pretty much said that. And I'm just, you know, going, I can't believe they're actually saying it. I mean, their experts told them, we don't know what we're doing. Let's do more of it. And that's the pandemic treaty in a nutshell. It's the smaller nations arguing for more poison and more injectables. But what they're really arguing for is more takeover by what I call the pharmaceutical hospital emergency industrial complex. They talk about a public health emergency of international concern, PHEIC. I talk about a pharmaceutical hospital emergency industrial complex. They want money, big money, to build factories in smaller nations so that they can have more injectables, because I will not call them vaccines, to poison their own people. And you think about it and you go, that doesn't make any sense at all. Are these people crazy? No, they know that if they can get pharmaceutical money, their country, okay, the crony capitalists among them will profit immensely. They don't give a crap about the health of their people. And the people most likely don't know that this is going on, but given their, you know, option, they'll be like, well, that's not what we want. You know, we need good food and good water and nutrition and, you know, no poisons and toxins. And it's a business opportunity. It's not a pandemic treaty.
I agree. And James, we have 9 minutes left. So share with us what our action steps should be and tell everyone your contact information, which I will also put in the description. But I think one of the things that is so vitally important, and I just am so honored to have you on the show today, and I believe your research and your voice, you're so courageous and have been so helpful in avoiding what was going to happen last May, and really instrumental in helping us know what to look out for now. But, you know, how can we help? And I know I've signed some of your things where we've sent in letters to the WHO asking for full disclosure and different things like that. But if you could tell us what to do.
those things are all prepared, but I actually want to say something that's really deep. And I know I only have 8 minutes, so I'm going to ramble here. The only thing I can take credit for is shining light on what the WHO is doing, okay? In my analysis and in my personal opinion, the reasons why the Biden amendments were kicked to the curb last May is not the reason why most people think they were kicked to the curb. I do not believe they were kicked to the curb and prevented for the right reasons. I think what happened was the powers that be in the smaller nations looked at those amendments and said, wait a minute, that's just a bunch of requirements on us. What's in it for us? There was a bunch of stick, but no carrot. And what they did is they put the kibosh on that so that they could come back around this time and negotiate a much more financially beneficial deal between the international health regulations for all of the requirements and the control mechanisms. But they want the money. They want the investment. They want the opportunity to corrupt the process and profit from it. And the Indonesian health minister, who's actually not a health minister, he's a banker, in his presentation at the G20, said it as plain as day. We've got billions of dollars coming, people, invest. Okay, now you can legally invest in companies that have a great future, but you have to think about it. If the control mechanisms are such, you know where that money is going to go, then you know who to invest in. And investing in pandemic preparedness products, pandemic response products, okay, or pandemic management products, whether it's PPE or drugs or injectables or factories or warehouses or whatever, it's just rife with corruption, okay? And so, unfortunately, the reason why things were stopped earlier in the year is now coming back for round two, and money, big money, is involved. And all I ever try to do is shine light on what they're doing in secret. And they're talking about the treaty in public, and they're working secretly on the amendments to the international health regulations. So anybody with a clue goes, oh, all right, well, pay attention to the public stuff, but it's the private stuff that you really got to worry about. And so I have a whole lot of things coming. If you go to jamesrogusky.substack.com, jamesroguski.substack.com, the only part that's hard is spelling my name. Or the easy thing is just call me. And you know I give my number every time I'm on. 310-619-3055. It's in the United States, so if anyone's outside the country code is +1-310-619-3055. It's complicated. It's crazy. The easiest action to take right now is to go to the Substack, jamesrogusky.substack.com, and just learn. Get up to speed. Understand what's going on so you can, you know, speak intelligently about it. But the easy action is just take this video and share it with every contact you possibly have. And don't tell them what they should do other than, hey, watch this video and tell me what you think. You know, this is something we should be concerned about. Number one, are you happy that if they institute an international or global vaccine certificate or vaccine passport or health certificate or whatever they want to call it, are you happy that you might not be able to travel outside the United States without following and being obedient with whatever they say that certificate requires? Okay. And here's the part that's been worse. I hate to leave you on a bad note, but I got to tell you the truth. It's not just the United States. This is a worldwide problem. We can't just hunker down in the United States and go, oh, we're good. You know, we're going to get our country to not agree to it. I'm sorry, people. That's not how it's going to work. If all the other nations adopt it, and we have to have a travel certificate to leave the United States. It's a wonderful place to be stuck. I love America, but we're then stuck here. We can't go anywhere else. We have to stop this on a global basis so everyone can travel, so that we can travel wherever we want to travel. And it's not just about travel, because that's just the Trojan horse, you know, get you into this uniform system. And then, oh, well, you know, now it's all of the other things that can be incorporated into that digital passport thing. Oh, you can't go here. You can't do this. You can't do that. You can't do the other thing. You don't get access to this. You don't get access to that. We cannot think that we're safe just because we are America, right? We're trapped in, we're not trapped, we're about to be trapped into a situation that is bigger than just one nation, okay? We have to fight for the freedom of everybody on the planet in order for us to keep our own freedom. So wake up. It's a really good time to wake up. The action is simple. Raise your own awareness. Right. And raise everyone else's awareness.
If we don't speak up, we acquiesce, which means we accept their deals. So it's very important that you let your voice be heard and that you speak up. And I think that's critical to know, because I think so many people just want to go hide their head in the sand and pretend everything is okay.
If you want to do more, if you want to get involved, if you want to take action, if you want to, you know, have a better understanding, call me.
Yes. And don't you have a meeting every day with people? Or
I have a Zoom meeting every day in an hour and a half. It's about 10:30 right now. It won't matter for people watching the video. But on my various articles, there is a daily Zoom 7 days a week at noon Pacific time. And everyone is welcome to participate. The main purpose of it is to answer people's questions. And so I make myself available at noon Pacific time every day. Pretty much on my Substack. I think I'm going to put up an article where it's just the Zoom link. But if you to very specifically, thepeoplesamendments.com, you'll find the Zoom link there.
Thank you so much, James, for all of what you're doing, and so grateful for your courage and your wisdom and for your research. And thank you so much for joining
me. Thanks for having me.
And I hope everybody goes and joins your Zoom meeting. And
we'll see what the capacity is. I may have to crank it up. But now is not the time to be complacent. Now is the time to pay attention and do whatever it is you are able to do. And call me and we'll talk about it.
Great. Thank you. Thank you, everyone.